On this episode of the Autumn Windbag, Soto goes solo today. I am currently in Cancun, Mexico on a bachelor party, still editing, still helping, but Soto did the show solo, talking about Dave Ziegler's winning recipe, Will Smith and Chris Rock in the slap, Bruce Arians' shocking move, and so much more. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I am Soto. RJ is not here. You're stuck with me. It's just me. You're welcome. Audrey is out in Mexico having fun, probably getting herpes on his face or something. Who knows? But he's not here. We were going to try to make it work where Audrey could, you know, sign off from location. Look, that was a long shot. All right. First off, he's in Mexico. He's in Tulum. He's there for a bachelor party. He's not thinking about, as much as he loves you guys, I don't know if he's looking to be recording a show right now. He is going to clean this up and make this look nice and, you know, put it up for you guys on Thursday. I'm recording Wednesday night. And yeah, I didn't have too many high hopes for good old JR to join us tonight. So it's okay. I'm at the controls. I got the wheel and we're going to head straight ahead. Let's have, like RJ says, let's have some fun today. So let's, first off, I want to make sure we get this out of the way. I want you to like, comment and subscribe. Guys, we love your comments, man. We love that we're heading up and our subscribers are climbing every single week, and we're getting a lot of good feedback from you guys. We love it. Tell us why you like it. Tell us why you don't like it. Tell us why you like our takes. Tell us why you don't like our takes. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what you don't like about the show. Either way, man, it's all good. Support all the Raider content creators out there. There's a lot of good ones. I'm not going to go into them because there's a ton of them, but you know who you guys are. And we're all family, man. Everyone can eat. Everyone has a good point of view and a good perspective. So let's go ahead and support everyone and show everyone out there that the Raider Nation is the one true nation. All right. Getting started, I want to talk about something that happened over the weekend at the Oscars. Everyone's talking about it. I didn't put it on the headlines, or I didn't put it on the title because, I mean, I didn't put it. Maybe RJ changed it, but I didn't put it on there. What the hell is Will Smith doing running on stage and slapping 120-pound soaking wet with a brick in his pocket, Chris Rock? Now, Will Smith is a large human being. He's like 6'4". He's a thicker dude. He's not that skinny gangly kid you saw on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. This is a grown-ass man. It's a big dude. Chris Rock is maybe like 5'10"-ish, 5'9", 120, 30 pounds, something like that. He's thin. And he's older, and there is no reason for you to put your hands on somebody that small who is not threatening you physically. If someone has got your goat or someone made fun of you or something, like, I understand where people might say, oh, yeah, he's talking about my wife or whatever. That's not the appropriate time. You're in a large event, you know, having going there. People have been made fun of in the past. He's a comedian. You're in the front row. You're going to get talked about. Let it roll off your back and handle it like a real man would do backstage. Say, Chris, I don't appreciate that. You know, this is, you know, my wife has alopecia or whatever the heck you want to say. Going up there and stop. Now, here's the deal. If it was real, what the hell? What the hell are you doing? Okay. If it was real, if it was real, I have no sympathy for Will Smith on what happens to him whatsoever. And here's why. Take a trip with me, okay? Back in the day, I hooked up with this girl in high school. And then out of high school, this girl started dating a guy that I met after I already graduated. And we became good friends. And he's like, oh, yeah, my girlfriend so-and-so. I'm not going to say the name. But my girlfriend so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, I know a girl with that name. And I'm just, you know, whatever. And it ended up being her. Okay. Small world, was in the same area. Whatever. Well, this chick treated this dude like crap. She would, like, if she didn't like his haircut, she would, like, break up with him on, like, a Friday or whatever. And then she would hook up with, like, two or three dudes over the weekend, and then they would make up on Monday. Now, this happened, like, multiple times, not just once or twice. This happened where she broke up. He was always talking to me about it. He'd be like, dude, I don't know what happened. Everything was going good. And then she just got really mad at me and she broke up with me. And then she went to Glamis over the weekend, or she went to Havasu over the weekend. And I'm sitting there like, oh my God, bro. So I finally broke it down to him. It wasn't my place, but whatever. He's my boy. I'm going to talk to him, right? And I saw it. He didn't see it, maybe because it was his relationship and he was in love, or he guessed he was, or whatever. I'm like, bro, she's inventing crap and she's blowing up stuff to fight with you just to break up, because she's already got this the other dude's lined up. She knows what she's gonna do. So in her twisted mind, by her breaking up with you or taking a break or whatever the hell they did, that shit was okay for her to do whatever she wanted, because she knew when she was gonna get back over the weekend, like on Monday or whatever, she was gonna get back with you and you would be okay with it. I still think that's cheating. If you're breaking up with somebody for a specific period of time just to get your thing in, and then you come back with her with other person, and you planned it out, that's just like a sophisticated way of cheating. Don't get me wrong. All power to you for getting it done and finding someone dumb enough to go along with it. But I think it's still cheating. So I think if it was real, I don't have any sympathy, because I didn't have any sympathy for my boy once I broke it down to him. And once he understood what was happening and he still stayed with her, no sympathy from you, bro. No sympathy whatsoever. You want this to happen. If I don't feel bad, like if you don't care that she treats you like crap, why should I care? Right? And from all accounts, you know, Jada going on TV and saying all this stuff about Will, and like, oh yeah, like if he loved me, he would have known I was cheating and all. And Tupac was better and all kinds of crazy crap. Like, dude, after a while, I'm like, come on, man. Stand up for yourself, bro. Stand up for yourself. And so, and for you to go and bow up on Chris Rock, on the real skinny-ass Chris Rock, in front of everybody and try to flex, that's absolutely ridiculous. This woman is making you out to be a fool. And then she goes on TV. Jada goes on TV the next day and, oh, my God, I need to... I'm so embarrassed by this, or I'm so traumatized by what Will did and blah, blah, blah. Like, she's not even backing him up when he was backing her up. So if it was real, I have no sympathy for you, Will Smith. You go ahead and do what you want to do. You got your little entanglement or whatever the hell you got going on. You're open to anything but jokes. So whatever, man, do your thing. Now, if it was fake, my question is why? Like, where did you really think, you meaning Will Smith, did you really think you were going to come off as a sympathetic figure? That, I mean, people that are like clueless or that are just, I don't know, that just don't know how adults should act in public are like, yeah, Will, you do that, man. You stand up for your chick and blah, 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 and this and that. Well, to those people, I'll say this. And I saw this on a meme too. I thought of it, but I saw it on a meme the next day. If that was The Rock and not Chris Rock, Will Smith wouldn't have said anything. So somebody that he can beat up and someone that he can like physically impose his will on, that has something to play into it too. So it just doesn't sit right with me. So whether it was real or whether it was fake, I think it was pretty much fake. But the thing is what are you looking to gain from this? What is Will looking to gain? I mean, I know what Chris Rock is looking to gain from this because his sales for his shows have been going through the roof. What does Will Smith have to gain from this? I think he comes off looking like a sucker. I think he comes off looking like a punk. And I think he comes off looking like somebody who's getting led around by a leash, by Jada. That's what I think he looks like. I think it's just a bad look overall. And just weird. Now, speaking of weird, you're Bruce Arians, right? You're the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You win the Super Bowl in 2020. You get to the divisional round, and you lose by a miraculous comeback by the Rams in 2021. Your quarterback retires. Your Hall of Fame, all-world everything quarterback retires. But then he comes back. After he comes back, and you're looking to reload, and you're getting a lot of good signings. You're re-signing people. You're fixing your offensive line. You're getting more weapons, right? You sign Russell Gage. You re-sign your receivers. Like you're getting a good squad back to roll it back. The NFC has been pillaged by the AFC for talent. Looks like it'd be a cleaner road for you, right, moving forward. Bruce Arians resigned today. He was the head coach. If I was Bruce Arians and I was looking to resign, I would have put my paper in like right after Tom Brady did. Tom Brady, you're leaving? Okay, I'm leaving too. He resigns. He's going to kick upstairs to be an executive. And Todd Bowles gets the job. Todd Bowles was the defensive coordinator. He had a stint with, I believe it was the Jets. Wasn't successful, but how many people are successful with the Jets? Let's be honest. But he's still got Byron Leftwich as the offensive coordinator. He's probably still going to take care of the defense. Great defensive mind. He gets a 5-year extension from the Bucs. So great deal for him. So congratulations, Todd Bowles. It's just really weird, man. Like something doesn't set right with me here. It's just a really strange situation. And the timing is really strange too. Like if you're Bruce Arians and you're going to retire, like wouldn't you retire knowing you don't have Tom Brady as opposed to after he already comes back? And who knows, maybe it was something that was set in motion earlier in the offseason. He just kind of felt like, well, like players always say, if you're asking yourself if you should retire, it's probably time to retire. Just the fact that the thoughts in your head that maybe it's time. And maybe that thought creeped into Bruce Arians' head after Tom Brady retired. Like, hey, man, maybe it's time to hang it up. And then he came back and he's like, do I really want to do this all over again? Do I really want to go through this all over again? And he's just like, maybe he said, well, you know, he's had some health issues in the past. Who knows, man? Who knows what's going on? Bruce Arians, I hope you're good, man. Congratulations on your career. Kicking upstairs, being executive now. Todd Bowles, also, congratulations. You have a cakewalk in the NFC. There's like a handful of teams, maybe like 4 or 5 teams that are legitimate teams to contend for the NFC title. There's like maybe triple that in the AFC now. One more thing coming out of the owners' meetings this last week, changes to the overtime rule. Now, the change that was accepted was only accepted for the postseason, but it was proposed as a change overall, basically where each team is guaranteed the ball. So it's going to change a lot of strategy, basically, because now you don't want to have the ball first. I don't think you want to buy it's one way or the if you know you're going to go for two, then you could put pressure on your opposing team that gets the ball second, because now they have to score a touchdown and they have to get a 2-point conversion. Well, or you can just sit back and wait and know what you have to do. But here's the deal. If you sit back and wait, right? So before we go any further, the rule changes. Basically, it's like the Josh Allen rule, right? Because of the game that he had with the Chiefs against Mahomes. Both teams are guaranteed the ball in the postseason if there's overtime. Why was this? Well, since the OT rules changed, I think it was like 2010 or something like that. The team that won the toss during the regular season only won 52% of the time. So it wasn't like a huge advantage if you won or lost the toss, right? It wasn't a huge advantage or disadvantage. 52% is not, you know, a crazy number. It's pretty close, right? So there's that. In the postseason, I think there's only been, I believe it was 12 postseason games since the new rule change, the last rule change to overtime. And there was 12 games, and the team that won the toss won 10 of those. So it's huge. It's like, you know, a huge flip, over 80% of teams that win the toss in the postseason and overtime end up winning the game. They just go to score a touchdown, and that's it. Game's over. Why, you say? Well, you usually have better quarterbacks, and they can lead your teams down to touchdowns and just have that be that. In the regular season, you have, you know, lesser teams, you know, maybe go back and forth, and the lesser team is playing a better team. Lesser team goes down, maybe kicks a field goal, or and the better team goes out and makes a touchdown, right? So, but with all things being equal, a good team is going to put together a good drive, and a good quarterback is going to, in crunch time, is going to put together a good drive and score touchdowns rather than score field goals. So, strategy change. You're looking at, what do you do, right? If you win the toss and you say, okay, well, you know, I want the ball because I want to know, I want to control things, right? You still run the chance of a team trying to beat you. And more than likely, the second team, let's say if you score down, you go down and score a touchdown and hit the extra point, the second team, the opposing team, they're probably going to go for two. And here's why. If they score down, if they go down and score a touchdown and kick the extra point, now it's next score win. So you can win with a field goal. They don't want to go through that because they just saw you march down and score a touchdown on them. So they lose their basically competitive advantage. But in another sense is the team that goes, that gets the ball second, knows what they have to beat. So they know, okay, if I score and hit this 2-point conversion, done, dada, game's over, right? So it does have some strategy come into play. You need to look at, you know, how the team's been cooking, how the defense is from the other side is, stuff like that. But only for the postseason for now, I don't see, I think it's worth it. RJ was talking about on his show about, oh, well, you know, you've played 75 minutes and blah, 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 and this and that. I'm like, look, man, postseason is different. There can't be no ties in postseason, okay? That's one thing that I didn't understand what RJ was saying. He was talking about, oh, 75 minutes went by and you can't find a winner. Then that week it should have been a tie. Well, you know, in the postseason you can't have a tie. You also don't want to have the game going on forever, right? Which, like, the college postseason, going back and forth. Some of those, like, triple, quintuple, like, you know, 6-7, like, you know, 5-6 overtimes sometimes. It doesn't happen often, but you see, you regularly see 3 or 4 overtimes. You don't want to do that. Players on these teams have already played 17 regular season games. They have already played those other playoff games. They have more playoff games to play. So you want to make it something where it's, I mean, I hate the word fair, but both teams get an equal opportunity in overtime. But it's also going to be a lot shorter game, I believe, than if you were to go like a different route where you have to, you know, go for two if both teams score the first touchdown or something like that. So I'm fine with it. I think it's cool. I think it'll work out well. I think a lot of the people will stop complaining. And ultimately, the NFL is entertainment, and the fans were clamoring for it. And whatever makes the game more exciting and more entertaining, I'm all for it. All right. So, I believe it was Tuesday. It was the AFC's turn to speak with the media. And the good thing about the COVID restrictions being totally eradicated by the NFL is not only in the upcoming season are reporters going to have full access to locker rooms like they did in previous years before COVID, but in the owners' meetings, they're able to get up close and personal. And the reporters are able to kind of bounce around and talk to all the different coaches on a one-on-one setting or two-on-one setting where it's a little bit more intimate. And I believe with that kind of atmosphere and setting. You get a lot more sound bites, a lot better information. I think the GMs and the coaches are a lot looser and they're able to speak a little bit more candidly than if they're above with the microphone and, you know, everyone else, all the reporters are standing there. It's more of a press conference feel and it's a little less personal. So last episode on my solo episode and also on RJ's solo episode, we took a look into Gruden and Mayock's philosophies towards free agency and also towards the draft. And we were in agreement that it was maybe one that lacked an appreciation for value, right? And kind of points to some of the head scratching moves we've made in free agency and also in early round picks. Heidi Fang was speaking to David. Heidi Fang posted on her Twitter, speaking to David Ziegler, talking about heading into the offseason and how patience is important. Take a listen.
I think with free agency, there's a level of, I think, patience and discipline that you have to have. You can get deals done as quick as you want to, depending on how high you want to go. You know, and I think there's a level of discipline that you have to have about whether it's at a position or whether it's a specific player. Like, how much are you going to allocate?
Okay, so a stark difference, right? Being patient, and Ziegler did say you can get deals done depending on how high you want to go. This wasn't a strong point of the last regime. They made a lot of big free agent signings very early, like the first day of free agency, and a lot of those guys didn't pan out. So Ziegler continues when he's talking about discipline and his approach and plan heading forward.
No, we weren't nervous. I think we were strategic in what we did. I think we had a plan to what we did, but at the same time, you have to be able to pivot, right? Because you are in on certain players, and then you get to a certain point where whether it's from a monetary standpoint, you got to bail out, or that player decides to go somewhere else. You know, you have to be ready to pivot. And I think that's the most important thing about free agency is you have a plan, like we talked about at the beginning, but you also have to recognize that you're going to have to be fluid and you're going to have to, you know, think on your toes to a degree and be flexible and, change your course of action if things don't pan out your way. So, no, we just kind of stay steady. There's a lot of players available. There's still, look at the market right now. There's still a lot of good players available in free agency. So I think patience is just a big part of it. And again, being fluid and flexible. And I think, always have things to learn and always have things to improve at, you know, and I think, but I thought we did a good job with that.
Big difference from the past regime here. It looks a lot calmer, a lot more measured approach, right? Mick Ziegler said, or Dave Ziegler said, you have to have an allocation. You have to have an amount you're willing to spend either on a position group or a specific player. And he said at the end there, I love the part when he said, if you don't have a cap, if you don't have a number that you're willing to spend on a specific player or position, you're going to go up and up and up, and that's how bad decisions are made. And that is a dagger directly into a lot of the decisions made by Gruden and Mayock. I think that clip right there showed you the measured approach, a lot more, just sounds like a lot more mature approach moving into free agency and also the draft. I believe that value is going to be something that's going to be put ahead of a lot of these sexy picks or a lot of these sexy free agent signings. And we heard that in the initial press conference where we're going to pick up guys and they may not be the splashy guys that everyone wants, but they're going to be the right guys for our team. And I feel like it's going to set us up for success moving forward. So I'm very encouraged by that interview. If you want to check it out, it's on Heidi Fang's Twitter. it's a good listen. It's only about two minute clip in total, and it really gives me a good feeling moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, McDaniels also talked about players who were on the team when he showed up. So existing players on the Raiders team. Now he did cut a lot of these guys. A couple of these guys go. Most notably on the defensive side, Kwiatkowski was gone, and what's his name? Freaking forgot his name. Out of sight, out of mind, right? Another linebacker. I forgot his name. Whatever. It's late. I'm tired. But he got cut too. There's still a few players that are left behind that maybe didn't live up to their potential, right? And we have to take a look at that. Why were they? It's none of these players. It's not Cleveland Farrell's fault. He was taken where he was taken, or Abrams, or Arnett, even, or Ruggs. It wasn't any of these guys' fault that they were reached for Leatherwood. They didn't ask to be chosen where they were chosen, but since they were, they got paid to be in that slot, and they also have the expectations of being that player. Now, the good thing is having a new regime come in, brand new, they can see a player for who he is, not to where he was drafted. The only way that will come into play is if, let's say, Cleveland Farrell or Abrams or Jacobs didn't want to sign an extension, and they want to sign an extension more commensurate to their draft position for like an extension or that guaranteed fifth year. That's where it can get a little sticky. Example, let's say, for example, Josh Jacobs wants to sign an extension. I want to stay with the Raiders. I want to sign an extension. I said, okay, we're going to sign you for a 3-year, $15 million extension. He's like, no, I was going to get paid almost $9 million in my fifth year. I want that, but then I want to be extended past that. Slow down. Good back. I don't know if you're worth $9 million. I don't think any back in the NFL right now is worth $9 million a year, because you're paying that much to a position where, number one, hasn't been known to age very well, and they could take so much punishment. And you've seen guys like McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, even Derrick Henry, they get the bag and then they get hurt the next year, right? Or keep getting hurt like McCaffrey and Saquon. Also, Josh McDaniels runs so many running backs. Like, he has, at least he consistently runs three backs. You're not going to get that bell cow back that's going to get all the crazy yards and all the crazy stats, but you're going to get a combination of three, maybe even four backs, depending on injury, that are going to be good contributors to your team. That's why, looking at it from that perspective, if Jacobs doesn't want to take that deal, I'd probably either flip him or, you know, unfortunately, if it comes to that, let him walk in free agency. So some of these players have, you know, a year left to prove what's going on and prove how they can fit into this system. And McDaniel said this about, not just about Cleveland Farrell, but about existing players on the team. He said, I think everybody for us is going to be a clean slate. It's going to be a clean slate, excuse me. I'm really not as interested in what they've done as much as what we can do moving forward. Now, speaking specifically of Cleveland Farrell, he'll earn his role. Whatever the role is going to be, he'll earn it. We might have some things we asked him to do that he hasn't done much of, but that might make him a better fit. Okay, what does that mean? Is he going to move to outside linebacker? That's what it sounds like, because outside linebackers often are schemed to cover a little bit more or rush with their head out of the dirt, right? From a two-point stance. So that sounds like what they're looking to, how they're looking to play Cleveland Farrell. But you never know. Maybe they kick him inside. Who knows? But it seems like McDaniels is coming into this with the perspective of, look, I'm not really sure how they were coached up before we got there, but we have them now. Let's see what we can get out of them. If we can get out of them something more than the previous regime did, great. If they're just not the player that the previous regime thought they were when they drafted them so highly, well, we can move on and decide then. One thing I will say is there's been a lot of talk on the message boards. And also, you know, I've heard a lot of talk because I've talked to a lot of Raider fans that are friends of mine as well. And I'm getting a little, you know, cracked on for coming down so hard on Mike Mayock. My only issue is this. Yeah, of course, you're out of a job, right? Rightfully so. But you do want to make yourself look good, but you don't want to make yourself sound clueless either. Hopefully that changes for Mike Mayock. Hopefully that changes if he has interviews, because honestly, if he interviewed for a job the way he interviewed with Dan Patrick, I don't think anyone would hire him. Hopefully it's a little bit different moving forward and he's able to maybe own some of those mistakes and miscues and have a better accounting for those. So let's see what we got going on here. Now we talked about the new regime and the emphasis placed on value, right? We're not going to reach for players. We're not going to overplay players. We're going to allot certain amounts of money and certain chunks of our cap to specific positions or specific players, depending on who they are. What value do McZiegler, so McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, have on Derek Carr? Now, we don't know that quite yet. It's free agency. It's lying season. It's the season where everyone lies and everyone just says, oh, well, you know, X, Y, Z, and this is white and this is black, and then it ends up being purple and green, right? Just like, you know, Pete Carroll was like, oh, yeah, we're not going to trade, you know, we're not going to trade Russell Wilson, and then freaking 2 days later he's traded, right? So it's total lying season out there, and everyone's posturing and just kind of like trying to keep their cool. So we've heard it before. We've heard the sound bites, and we've, you know, seen it on Twitter or Instagram or wherever you get your news, that McDaniels and Ziegler are looking to find that sweet spot with Derek Carr. Of course, the infamous the line is Derek's going to do what's best for him, and he has every right to do what's best for him. We are going to do what's best for us. Hopefully, we find that sweet spot in the middle. I think they're going to find it. I hope they find it. But how much of a value would you put? So this is not a question of, do you want to re-sign Carr? Yes or no. How long you want to sign Carr? You know, 3 years, 5 years. It's what value do you place on Derek Carr? Now, Josh Dubow, and I think Josh Dubow is one of the biggest trolls out there. He's like covers the Raiders, but he's always talking crap all over them, like finding every reason to just talk crap on them. But the thing is he puts up numbers and he puts up stats. He posted on his Twitter page that, let's see here, points scored by the Raiders in Carr starts. 21.4 average. So 21.4 points the Raiders have scored in Carr starts. That's the second fewest for any quarterback with 100 plus starts in the past 20 seasons. The only quarterback who has a lower average points per start with 100 more starts in the last 20 years is Ryan Fitzpatrick. So that's one way to look at things. Okay. Now, how can you explain that away? Because there's a reason for a lot of things. One thing you can look at is the lack of weapons Carr's had, the lack of continuity Carr's had, and the fact that when he has had more continuity and more weapons, he's performed better. His third year with Gruden and Gruden's system with pretty much the same cast of characters weapons-wise for at least a chunk of the season, he was able to put up some decent numbers last year, okay? When he was in his third year in 2016, one of his best years statistically, and the team won 12 games. All right. He also had a couple of good wide receivers. He had a good tight end. He had a nice running game. So we've seen that when Carr has weapons, he's able to put up better numbers. Now, one thing I will say also is on the PFF Las Vegas Raiders Twitter site, they posted, it kind of contradicts this, that Carr has the highest adjusted completion percentage of 79% of any starter since 2018. Now, what does adjusted completion percentage mean? Well, that takes out drops, basically. There's a couple more things involved, but that basically, if you threw the ball and it should have been caught and the receiver drops it, that doesn't count against you, right? So this is, so basically 80% of his passes are good passes and they should be completed. 80% of his passes, given all the defense, given all the issues he had with his offensive line, given all the issues that he has with a revolving door of cast of characters with his weapons, he puts the ball where it can be caught and a play be made nearly 80% of the time. And it's the highest in the NFL since 2018. What does that all mean? Well, I'm of the opinion that stats are like titles in a corporation, like corporate titles. The rule is the longer the title in corporate America, the less valuable you are, right? If you're like the head planner of strategic planning for arts in the Western District, that's a really long title. That means the more you have to put on to describe who you are, the less valuable you are. That's how I feel about stats. So the more you have to add on to a stat to say, hey, this is a good stat for you to go by, I believe the less valuable it is. I believe the more, the less you have to say about a stat, the higher the value is. It's very, very clean, very simple. Now, does that mean that this like if someone's a CEO, short title, three little letters, very important, right? You know, lowest amount of points scored with 100 starts in the last 20 years. That's pretty straightforward. Now you're making it, now you have to qualify certain things because, you know, you have a couple of backup guys jump in there for a couple of games here and there, and they don't get 100 starts and they only scored, you know, 5-10 points a game, of course. But no, you're talking about legitimate starters who are starters on their team for like five seasons, at least 5 or 6 years. He has the lowest or the second lowest behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick has started a lot of games in the NFL for being a journeyman. So what does that mean? To me, that means this. To me, you have to look in and you have to understand not just the what, which is the stat, but the why. And we touched on the why a little bit. I don't think it's all Derek Carr's fault. I think that having been given a more consistent cast of weapons, like let's say a Patrick Mahomes or like Justin Herbert to start his career, he has a set cast of weapons that he has to throw to that are good weapons. Unfortunately, Derek Carr didn't have that. He had a couple of guys in Cooper and Crabtree. Crabtree kind of like fell off towards the end of his career, started dropping a lot of balls. Cooper looked uninterested and got shipped out, and they haven't really been able to replace him since, up until this year, moving forward. So I feel that Carr is going to have probably one of his best seasons. The reason being this, you have a freaking Waller. I mean, an absolute freak. You have a very good pass-catching tight end in Foster Moreau. Combine that with the fact that you have a head coach who's also your play caller who loves, like, loves two tight end sets, who loves to scheme tight ends that are matchup problems. And these two guys, Moreau and Waller, put together on the field at the same time, that's going to be a matchup problem. So you have that. Also, you have some familiarity with some of the running backs that he's picked up. You also have Kenyon Drake, who's a good receiving back. And you have Josh Jacobs, who's shown that given the ability, he can rip off some big run after catches if you give him some space. And you have, again, a head coach who's also the play caller who likes to throw the ball to running backs. And he likes to scheme it open, and he's really good at it. Not to mention, you have probably one of the top handful of slot receivers in the NFL in Hunter Renfrow, over 100 catches last year, 9 touchdowns. This guy does nothing but just get open and catch balls. If you need a ball, third and Renfrow, that's your guy, right? You have that. To scheme him open, it's not going to be hard because he can get open even if you don't scheme him open, right? To end it all, to put the cherry on top, you have one of the elite receivers in the National Football League. Now, when you say elite, you don't mean very good or a starting receiver. You mean like a top 4 or 5 guy that you can make an argument that one of these 4 or 5 guys is the best in the NFL. And that's Davante Adams, who just happens to be a very close personal friend of our quarterback, Derek Carr, who just happens to have a very similar skill set to your best slot receiver with size and speed closer to your tight end, maybe not as big, but just a machine, able to get open in tight spaces, able to get open deep, just able to get open against any type of bracket coverage, double coverage, single coverage, man, zone, whatever. You can put the ball boy on him too, and you'll probably still get open. So I feel having all those toys to play with, I think Josh McDaniels is going to have a fun time scheming these things open. Now, I was asked a question by someone a couple weeks ago. Does having all these weapons make Carr fumble less? Does it make him take less sacks? Does it make him less, skittish under pressure in late games? I say this. Whenever you have better weapons, it just makes everything else easier. The one thing I said when we got Davante Adams is he changes the defense. You now have to change as a defense how you defend the Raiders, because instead of your primary attention being placed on Darren Waller, you have to place that primary attention on Davante Adams. And guess what? You can't focus all that attention on multiple people. You can really only bracket one guy without just leaving yourself completely exposed. And consider that we have another great pass-catching wide receiver in Renfrow and 2 great receiving tight ends. Which 2 are you going to pick? Are you going to pick, okay, well, we're going to double Waller and we're going to double Adams and we're going to make sure that they don't beat us? Well, guess what happened last year, especially when Waller came back and was really kind of not right. He was kind of a shell of himself because he was still not 100%. Those IT band injuries are tough. Renfrow blew up because the defense was putting a lot of attention on Waller, and you just can't take away 2 weapons. You can probably take away one or try to take away one. And Davante Adams even showed it's really hard to take him out of the equation as well. So I think Derek Carr's stats are going to go up. My one concern is this. Derek Carr had an issue throwing the ball deep until last year. Last year in 2021, we did throw the ball deeper down the field, which is great news for us. That kind of factors into his high adjusted completion percentage because he wasn't throwing the ball down the field as much, because it goes all the way back to 2018. I understand this last year, 2021, he did go down the field more, but the seasons before that, he wasn't really throwing the ball that deep. He was more of a dink and dunk guy. And of course, if you throw it shorter, you're going to have a higher completion percentage. You do a lot of dump offs and check downs, you have a higher completion percentage. I get that. My issue is, the issue with Carr that I have is more so the 21.4 average points per game, not the completion percentage, not the yards per game, because when it's macho time, when you're in the red zone, he hasn't been the greatest. Now, have that. That being said, you have two of the premier wide receivers in the NFL who can get open in small spaces. When you're in the red zone, it's not so much about your speed. It's not so much about just how fast you are. It's about how quick you are out of your breaks, how well you set up the opposing defenders, and the timing that you have. It also doesn't hurt to be a freak of nature like Darren Waller and just be, 6'5" and with a long wingspan and hands the size of, freaking catcher's mitts, right? So we have two weapons that are very similar, one being a little bit better than the other, which is Adams and Renfro, that are able to get open in short spaces. They're able to juke guys. They just make guys miss. And again, you can't double everybody, right? Someone's going to be open if you do that. And I don't have a problem. I don't think Derek Carr has a problem dumping the ball off to Foster Moreau because they leave him wide open, right? And on top of that, you have Darren Waller, who's a freak of nature, who can just go up and get the ball over everyone. And oh, I almost forgot, Bryan Edwards is, a pretty big receiver and a pretty good high point receiver. We saw that the last few years. He does score red zone touchdowns, and the majority of his red zone touchdowns are him jumping over defenders and taking the ball away from them. So I feel that plus the new schemes that we're going to have with McDaniels, he's never had an issue scoring in the red zone. He's always been good scoring in the red zone, and it hasn't always been the running game. He's good at scheming, and he's good at getting his players open with his concepts in the red zone in the passing game. So I feel that's going to be a big improvement. So all that come together, the value of Derek Carr, I believe, is going to be pretty high. Not only because you're looking at a player who could still be on an ascension, and I believe will be on an ascension for the next few years. I believe he has at least the next 4 years with the strong probability of improving on his numbers from the previous year. Like, he can still get better the next few years over and over and over, like one after another. Very similar to like a young quarterback once they kind of figure it out. This is kind of Carr's time right now for a second resurgence, because he's never had these type of weapons before. He's never had this type of offensive mind before, who's more dynamic, who's more creative, who's more modern in his approach. He had Gruden, who was a good offensive mind, but he was very, very structured, very limiting, very stubborn in his approach. And it worked, but it didn't really take full advantage of all his weapons. So how are they going to pay him? Who knows? RG was clamoring for a full 5-year deal without the funny money on the end, like you see a lot of quarterbacks get, just for cap purposes and stuff like that. I don't know, man. I'm thinking the 4-year deal, a 3-year extension. So you take into account his next year, which is at $20 million darn near, and you extend him 4 years after that, or excuse me, 3 years after that. That's 4 years of seeing how he keeps going up, up, up. Within, you're going to know after this first year, okay, Derek Carr is going to work in our system, because he's only going to get better. We're going to get him better weapons. We're going to get him more. We're going to be better after this first year. So after this first year, Derek Carr does really well. I would say after the year two, it's time to re-up him again and extend him again, just to give yourself maybe a little bit of cap flexibility, but also make sure you lock him in before it goes super crazy. Because after that third year, that's that year where the Burrows, the Herberts, all these guys are going to get these big, huge paychecks. Maybe you don't want to wait all that much time to re-up again. You can always extend early when you have a contract. Maybe Carl will go for it. Maybe he won't. I have full confidence that this team will be able to find that sweet spot with Derek Carr and his representation, and we keep Derek Carr as our quarterback moving forward. All righty. So it's time for my favorite part of the show and yours for What Up Winbacks. So here we have Safe Belayer. He says, Why assume that Mayock was responsible for any of the first round picks and that was the primary cause of his release? Isn't it more likely assumption that Davis knew Mayock wasn't a true GM? Ziegler's notably more qualified. With Gruden present, Mayock's insufficient skill set as a GM was tolerated. Without Gruden, bye-bye, Mike. Plus, consider Gruden's terrible first-round drafting history as more likely the cause of bad first-round drafting. Yeah, I don't know, man. We don't know. This seems to be going back and forth. On one hand, you're saying that Gruden, that Mayock wasn't a GM, and you're leaving it all on Gruden's feet. I don't think Gruden is the type of person who's going to watch film on every one of these college guys. I don't think he's going to put that amount of time that, let's say, a Mike Mayock, who's used to doing this every single year for every single draft prospect. I don't know that Gruden is going to do that. And I think Mike Mayock is a much more likely candidate to do that tape watching and do that, the amount of tape watching. With that being said, I can definitely see Gruden falling in love with a guy and Gruden saying, this is our guy. We want him. And that's all we're going to do. Even if we can't move down, we're going to get our guy because that's the guy we want. Now, I would say that, and I would say that's probably it. Until we listen to Mike Mayock basically echo that same sentiment on getting the guy that he wants. Now, if you guys missed it, what he said was, if, you know, Malik, he used Malik Willis as your example. If Malik Willis is your 14th rated guy, then you have no business taking him at two, right? He's your 14th guy, not your second guy. You drafted your position. But then he added this caveat. He said, but if Malik Willis is your guy, even if you draft him earlier, even if you take him early, what does it matter if you still got your guy? I flipped out. RJ flipped out. That's the reason why we had these reaches in the first round, because they wanted to get their guy. So this is not just an issue with Gruden not knowing how to appreciate the concept of value, not only in free agency, but also in the draft. It was also Mayock's as well. So we don't know who was who or who was what. All we know is this. They were in the same group. They were in the same team. And they are going to be hit with the same stink. And that's why they're both gone. Ryan Campbell writes in. He says, I think the poor judge of character was too much by Mayock and Gruden. Antonio Brown was an embarrassment. I agree. The Damon Arnett situation was embarrassing, both the draft and the character issues, and I double agree. The Henry Ruggs situation was a mark on the program. It was too much. Yeah, man. You know, you have to wonder what the heck they were doing. By they, I mean pronouns, pal. What the heck Mayock and Gruden were doing in that freaking building. When you get all those reports that Ruggs was being an idiot, like a bunch of times, driving erratically around the practice facility, he was having issues in previous years, driving too fast. Arnett had issues getting into car accidents and fleeing the scene. It just is a bad look, man. It's just a bad look overall. The Antonio Brown trade was a debacle. Just a lot of these reaches, can we put it at the feet of Gruden and Mayock that Henry Ruggs goes out there, gets drunk, drives 150 miles an hour, and kills a poor young lady and her pet? No, we can't. What we can say is we can question the level of involvement and the level of discipline in that building to allow Ruggs to have the reputation of being a very wild and very kind of just very fast driver in very unsafe situations. what are you telling this guy? Are like, ah, oh, whatever, he's Henry Ruggs. We need him on our team. Or are you disciplining him? Who knows? Mayock came across as a very stern disciplinarian. Who knows how it was back, you know, behind the scenes. Gruden comes off as a really tough guy, but he's a total player's coach. So we don't know what happened behind the scenes. Unfortunately, bad things happened. Unfortunately, someone lost their life, and that's just a terrible tragedy you never want to see happen. Moving forward, I feel like this new regime is going to be a lot, keep things a lot buttoned up, a lot tighter than that. Chris H. wrote me a freaking novel, so let's get into it. I feel like I am one of the few Raider fans that think the Finns got fleeced in this deal. 5 picks is a lot to give up for one player, and in my opinion, a trade like that should only happen if you're a team already built to win that's in need of a quarterback. I believe he's speaking of the Dolphins and the trade with the Chiefs for Tyreek Hill. Plus, while Hill is electric, I think he is more of a product of Reed's system than people realize. Hill isn't beating intense press or double teams from good defenses. He isn't a master of the route tree, able to run every route in an offense. He isn't going to get you tons of catches high-pointing the ball in traffic. His success comes from screens, jet sweeps, going over the top, or streaking underneath. He is maybe the most explosive weapon at wideout, but he needs the pieces of the system to bring out his potential. Although I can agree with that, it does help him. You have to look at the way that the Dolphins used their weapons, their other weapons last year. Look, I think, I don't know that let's say that necessarily the Dolphins got fleeced on the deal. What I think is we got a great deal. People that were... And let me digress for a moment here. If you guys noticed, in the offseason before last year, we traded away Rodney Hudson. And while Rodney Hudson was on our team, he was talked about how, oh, he's getting older and he's making a ton of money and, you know, his stock is slipping and he's not the same guy anymore. He's with the Raiders now. They have an expensive line and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. As soon as we traded Rodney Hudson to the Cardinals, he was then ranked the top center in the league. So with us, he was an older, descending player. He gets flipped to a new team, and suddenly he's the top center in the league again. Now, Devontae Adams, on the other hand, oh, well, the Packers have to lock up Devontae Adams. He's the weapon that you know that Rodgers needs, and blah blah blah. He's this, he's that, he's all world, he's all this, he's all that. He gets traded to the Raiders, and he goes from all that to being the number 5 ranked receiver in the league. So go figure. All I gotta say is that trade that was completed between the Chiefs and the Dolphins for Tyreek Hill just made the trade that Mick Ziegler was able to pull off with the Packers to get Devonta Adams made that trade look even better. I don't really care how it affects the Dolphins. I don't really care how it affects the Chiefs. Ultimately, we have to take care of ours. We have to make sure that we are on the ascension, on the upswing, and we keep getting better and better and use our weapons wisely. I really do think it's going to happen for us this year. Look for big things. All right, guys, that's the time I have for today. RJ should be back, hopefully without any cold sores next week. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Guys, follow Raiders content creators. I cannot say this enough. If you're a Raider fan, if you love content, we're all different. We all talk about the same subjects because, hey, it's the offseason. And even during the season, it's just like we're covering the same team. The same shit is happening to each of us, right? But we have different spins on it. We talk maybe some people are a little bit more tape heavy. Some people are more opinion heavy. Some people are analyst heavy. Who knows, man? Whatever your flavor is, support everybody. Watch everyone's stuff. Make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe. Be good to each other. Be good to everyone in Raider Nation. And I want to tell you this one last thing, everybody. Go Raiders.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those good places, and of course on YouTube, where most of the action happens. Until next time, later.